And that seems to be recording. Okay, so welcome, everybody. I'm not sure how I can monitor the... Let's see. Just start flapping like this if you can't hear me or something like that. But on that, so... So we've been carrying on with the Bodhisattva Paramitas, and you've had a taste of it if you were listening on Wednesday to Kate about Kshanti Paramita, and this will be the one about practicing with patience. And we've been working our way through generosity and ethics and mindfulness exercises and importance of, and we're building our little wheel, and it's getting firmer and stronger as we go. And I will have to admit my patience and tolerance for writing. I was up and down and rewriting and working things and stuff like that, like at 2 o'clock in the morning. So a good portion of this might be fairly organic. So we'll see how it goes, but we'll see what happens. So on the top, it's when we look at the literature, they're saying patience is the most important of all bodhisattva practice, because without it, all the others will eventually fail. But I kind of seem to have a feeling that they keep saying this one's the most important one, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, you guys are being a little suspicious here. So, but I guess it's just to advance the notion that one spoke isn't any better or worse. It's not the keystone of an arch. It's all of the spokes in the wheel. So, but certainly generosity and ethics support the practice of patience. And being patient with our imperfections we experience in our life, including frustration at our own lack of skillfulness, deepens our ability to generously offer the gift of fearlessness. And we've talked about that way back a couple of talks ago. So easy to do when things are going well, but when things fall apart, we revert to our old patterns. Can't do it right now, haven't got time. You know, it's just, but what, and this is norm, and what they haven't understood is that difficult times are the most fruitful time for spiritual practice, because they're exactly when the practice of patience comes into play. When things get tough, you should intensify rather than set aside your practice. And so with some of these concepts, especially when you look at the older texts, you know, patience is another one of those. You kind of know what it is and you don't know what it is when you really get, but you know the opposite. So we know what impatience looks like. So I always think it's sometimes when I'm struggling as I look at the opposite and what does that present, and things we usually hate, anger, rage, contempt, aggression, disgust, nausea, rejection, aversion, ill will, violence, all kinds of things that look the opposite of impatience. And impatience shows up in the ego because we want things to happen the way we planned. Our own ideas are the only ones we take into consideration. We forget there are other factors. This is from Wright, and when he wrote it, he said, "We are only one of 4 billion people on this planet." It's actually 7.8 now from the time that he wrote it, so double. And this planet is one little speck in this galaxy, and there are innumerable galaxies. They talk about the cycle. And Kate talked about this too, with some of the words with Kshanti Paramita is translated as forbearance and endurance. I don't know about you, but I don't use the word forbearance much in my day-to-day language, and some of these terms I find somewhat challenging to get a grasp on. This looks like Aiken, that it's a virtue that appears in the absence of hatred, repugnance, and malice. So that doesn't feel quite right. You know, that's sort of a little bit of that list of what impatience looks like, and it's not really not just the absence of that. And so it's tricky with these terms. So forbearance, you know, with a sense of quietly enduring, implies strength, steady as she goes, being solid, being able to be counted on. Tolerance has more of strength, I guess, maybe behind it. Endurance implies a non-judgmental acceptance, but does acknowledge we're human and can get caught up. And then there's the being patient with our impatience, or being impatient with our impatience. So implies a kind of benign neglect. These are like Rosetto and Norman, a few other people, on how they define tolerance. Endurance, especially that bearing of, and despite fatigue, stress, or other adverse conditions, amazing physical endurance. So you kind of, you know, the big stories of endurance, or even like athletes that endure all of these obstacles and things like that. And I don't really think that's quite it either. But we do have some suggestions and ideas. They don't leave us hanging. But like the other paramitas, it's more of an attitude that arises rather than from guidelines imposed from the outside. And they also remind us you can't make a Buddha without patience. So it's a requirement. And the way it looks, you know, it's the perfection of composure. Those who are trained in this virtue, imperturbable, another word I can't say, unable to be upset or excited, tranquility, well composed, calm, focused in the midst of adversity, able to think clearly under the stress of turmoil, attain admirable constancy that even in the face of adversity equips them to move effectively, able to conserve their energy for positive steps, not overwhelmed by self-destructive temptations of fearfulness, surrender, anger, and retaliation. As a quality of insight, can see the overall event, it's kind of unruffled, which is pretty lofty. Would be nice, you know. You know, would be great, you know. You know, so, but we do get, you know, bits of it. And then there was an emphasis, and Kate emphasizes, you know, being tolerant, or, you know, exuding patience, all of that is still an active process. It's not inaction. And the analogy I kind of think of is, especially in a lot of you participate, active listening. From the outside, it looks like there's not much going on. On the inside, there's a lot going on, you know, of the processes, you know, and it might be one that's a little closer to home that we can draw on. In getting a sense of how you know you might be doing it right or not right, give or take, is that patient compassion is not draining. It's something that comes a little more easily, a little closer to this fabulous job description of a Buddha, you know, that we would aspire to. And that we have to remind ourselves our wishes to be generous and ethical with our dealings with ourselves and others. And so some of the common ones, though, that are that you don't want to be fooled into, is that patience is not to be confused with being rigid or analogous to being resigned, or, this is Diane, ask for more than just a mere mental shrug of the shoulders. Not to be confused with self-control, which is also, you know, you see that where, you know, somebody's looking, trying to manage the situation, but if you looked at their hands, they're white knuckling, you know, so they're maybe not out of control on the outside, but, you know, how much are they wrestling this patience? And it doesn't mean complacency either. So what does it do? It was a good thing I listened to Kate's talks, because she, we did parallel on the categories on how the texts talk about the types of arenas that we work in. Patients with personal pain and hardships, patients with suffering caused by your interactions with others, which includes anger, and we're going to come back to that, and patient with the painful truths about our human life. And then you'll see some of the more classic, this forbearance, endurance, hardships, accepting of truth. What I thought was kind of fun, though, was some of the more old texts, Vasubandhu and Nagarjuna. And they have, you know, like some of this old language is kind of cute, you know, where it's physical, you know, insults on literally standing in the way of people that are going to cause harms. They also talk about types of beatings that you might have to endure, which I thought, well, I guess maybe in the time that would come up more, you know. They talk about encountering one who swears. And it's like, whoa. And the types of scoldings that happen. So the ones that are based in truth. So I gather, like, if you've been scolded, but it's truthful, sense, you should have a sense of shame. But if it's not true, don't worry about it. You know. So, and then things like encountering people who are angry and what to do with that. Another category was patience with those who are, there were twos with the with people. People and Dharma. So patience with people, with beings who are respectful and contribute offerings. And then the other category are hateful and may scold or even bring injury. So that was their grouping. And then their patience with respect to Dharma were non-mental and mental. So mental, non-mental inward were hunger, thirst, aging, sickness, death. And outwards were cold, heat, wind, rain, the elements, and I guess situations. And then mental had two types of categories, and one category was the hatred, worry, doubt, and so forth. The second category was arrogance, sexual desire, and so forth. So that's not quite the way we look at ours in, I guess, contemporary days. And I think the ones that this was pretty much all the writers were pretty consistent about picking the general hardships of personal others and the universe, I guess, to be succinct. So with hardships, most people are going to figure this one out. For discomfort, poverty, pain, usually starts with thoughts like, I can't take this anymore, how long is this going to go on? Chants like that. But what we do know is that we can't fully practice patience without encountering suffering, and that kind of makes sense. You know, if nothing was going on, there wouldn't be anything to be patient for. And so all human beings, no matter how privileged, will go to the basic truths, we'll get sick, we'll face disappointments, we'll do our face our own death. Life has suffering, but call us to awaken from the avoidance of this truth and face it directly and wisely. Includes physical pain, practicing with that, being able to endure discomfort with grace and ease, and can be emotional, can extend to emotional depending on the situation. This is Norman, but once you get to the point in your body and all the way to your heart and soul, that avoiding pain, adjusting, blaming, perseverating about it just makes the pain worse. And you see that facing pain with tolerance and dignity is much better. A monk asked Zhai Lin, what's the meaning of the Bodhidharma coming to the West, from the West? Zhai Lin said, I'm stiff from sitting so long. It's like, there you go. Mental, not getting what you want, disappointments. and requires adjustings of attitudes, perspectives. I put this in, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but the Buddhist perspective, according to Wright on page 99, sees discomfort as insignificant. And I'm like, I don't know about that, you know, so... But I get you and I don't, okay, you know, but completely insignificant. And we'll get into that later, so I just... And then the second category, harm or insult from sentient beings. And that's our relationships to others. Now, part of my last night in wandering around is I have a habit of listening to podcasts, and I was listening to this podcast about our brains and how they were changing in COVID. But it also talked about this group of nuns that lived in the convent, and they did this study on their brains and how they tolerated and their brains and their relationships. And they found that even there were some that were actually even probably suffering from Alzheimer's, but not as noticeable. And the hypothesis was because of having to deal with each other, doing the challenges, the close quarters and all of that, that actually was very brain empowering, and that they actually suffered less with their brains than people that maybe could avoid some of this stuff, right? You know, so it just sort of, you know, that just brought home that, you know, there you go, eh? The sanghas, your blessing and your curse, right? You know, but, you know, just in case, it might keep you from a little bit of mental distress later on or, you know, oblivion. So, and it talked about the neural pathways and things like that, but I thought that was pretty interesting, actually. And then, you know, our relationships are our greatest joy and love at the fullest, and it, but the human experience, Norman, but it's complicated. But there's lots of writings about this in the texts about giving attention to the ability to tolerate the differences between human beings, overcoming a variety of immature postures, and immature postures are like impatience, anger, hatred, and overcoming that is essential to the Bodhisattva practice. Santideva advises to focus on hatred and anger, the claim that generosity and morality performed through thousands of eons can be destroyed by hatred. So that's how important it is. You've already heard the P one by Basho, so I'll move along that. About tolerance and sentient beings. We've got Isa. I'm sorry it's so small, but please do practice your jumping fleas of the house. And just embodying it, you know. So again, people greater than me, perhaps. And the third category is acceptance of truth, non-arising a phenomenon. And my notes, this is big, this is esoteric, this is, you know, not within my wheelhouse. Yeah, there's lots of stuff if you want to delve into it. If that's what you enjoy or you're ready for, I'd say I can give you some texts to take a look at on that. But I kind of did like some of the other authors. Maybe skipped over it a little bit, so. But we do need to be aware of all forms of suffering and to be open to our ultimate truths. And those would be like what we write in the Heart Sutra, all phenomena are marked by emptiness. They neither arise nor cease. There's lots. Patient acceptance of the non-arising, non-ceasing of phenomena is a capacity of mature bodhisattvas and Buddhas. Patient acceptance of the ultimate truth is the same as patient acceptance of the intimacy of all things. This is Anderson, who reminds us of, it's on our Haron, I think, great is the matter of birth and death, and permanence is swift. Be mindful and awaken to this. Don't waste time. And our, you know, general existential existential fears. I've written spoiler alert. Sometimes I forget what I've written. So appreciating the emptiness is the fruit of our practice of the sixth paramita, the perfection of knowledge. So that's the ending. So anyway, I'm not going to get into it. But I do have sort of what I've gleaned as bottom lines on. And I think Wright, I liked his actual statement here. If all the six perfections are based on the expectations that human beings develop, the freedom to sculpt themselves and their circumstances in liberating ways, then the perfection of tolerance is essential to this effect. Without the developed capacity to face difficulties that arise in constructive ways, there's little hope of enlightened movement. And I like that part because it brings back that, what we talked about with vow and intention, and that we have a capacity to shift and move. So there's always hope around that. So we can't practice patience without encountering suffering. It's to tolerantly forbear hardships and difficulties, but not passively. It requires us to be fully present. It's calling for compassionate presence without turning away. And it encourages us to explore more deeply what it means to rest and fully engage in the truth of each moment. Patience matures and is perfected by being present with our discomfort in the smallest units of time and space, to be in the smallest unit of now. I think hang on to that word small. So we're going to swing back to anger. This is a popular topic in my life, and so I've actually latched onto it quite significantly. And I guess we've got here Santideva by Wright on the perfection of tolerance to focus on anger and hatred. Both very strong words and terms. And looking at meditation as being the most effective to calm. I'm trying to think, this is where I kind of kept. There's certainly lots of information again about almost the different types of angers, because we get into social injustices and groups and things like that that will rile us up in different ways. And there's again lots of discussion around that. It would be interesting just to delve on that on its own. But I think for this I'm looking at more the close to home and beginning right here. Little, again, traditionally, you know, Norman's saying there's a great deal of traditional discussions on patients focusing on anger. But I was actually talking to Kate when I was actually flipping through various books and things like that, both Buddhist, non-Buddhist and stuff. The actual word anger was actually a little elusive. It was sort of like they wanted to call it everything else but, you know, so I thought that was curious. And then again, like I say, in these Buddhist texts, you know, I found it elusive. Norman does address quite a bit of the chapter on anger. And I actually got reflecting, and I did actually get the book, because I remember him talking. There was a set of talks that he and the authors alluded me right now that talked about spiritual bypassing. And in that, they talked a lot about anger. And so I'm just really just going almost verbatim here, but I think it's worth going over to understand. So looking at anger makes sense. Anger poisons relationships. In the traditional teachings, anger is never justified. But facing our anger is an important acupressure point in our practice. Although spiritual teachings tell us anger is bad, demonizing anger and never trying never to be angry won't work. When we're angry, we just have to be angry. Turn toward it to experience it without affirming it and saving it around. It's to practice patience. And Kate talked about this too, you know, with anger, it's intense, unpleasant, flooding, fiery. Can be addictive, because it can make you feel powerful and effective that way, you know, but it can become toxic. And it can be a lot more complicated in that it's usually covering up other emotions. Or it's directed at the wrong object or person. So things to know about anger. It isn't rational or calming. Decisions made in anger are likely to be inaccurate and make matters worse. It's associated with a sense of fear and threat. If threatened, I feel vulnerable. Anger flares up and makes me feel powerful. And it isn't intentional, it just happens. It also has a legitimate place. It arises for a reason. Since every moment arises from the totality of past conditions, a moment of my anger is produced by everything that has ever happened to me. So this moment of anger must be here. There's no use in regretting it or trying to avoid it. But if I can be present with it, I will benefit. And can I learn something valuable about myself and about being human? So we go back to patience as an antidote for anger and a primary condition for enlightenment. You can face pain and relax and breathe with it. Oh, the author here is masters on the spiritual bypassing. Anger that is denied compassion easily becomes anger delivered, however indirectly, without compassion. To neither repress or indulge in our anger is far from an easy undertaking. The challenge is to meet our anger with mindfulness and genuine caring. So then we get into... And I mean, think it too, because like I said, anger is really, I would imagine, rage might be a little further along the spectrum that it, like, it's everything. It's all everything. But because of the intensity of anger, it's also, even though it's uncomfortable, I think it still needs to be acknowledged and not liquidated. So he reiterates, you know, how do we practice with anger? It's an indicator. We notice it. We embrace it. Use mindfulness around it. Observation, no judgment or fixing, simply noticing and embracing. Which is very hard for us to do because we, by nature, are conflict avoidant. And we're certainly going to be the most avoidant with ourselves, most likely, you know, on that. And so practicing with anger is almost like a desensitization. You need to think about it and learn about it and notice it and the phenomenon of anger. And start saying to you, this is anger, this is what it feels like. And train yourself to pause. And then when the anger moment has passed, take time to investigate. Meditate, reflection. There's a number of ways. And this is Norman's last. Practice the ninth precept. I vow to practice love, not harbor ill will. Doesn't mean you won't harbor ill will, but practicing begins with simply noticing. And instead of justifying, excusing, remind yourself that although there right now, they won't always be. yeah, ill will. I kind of remind him, you know, like, you know, retreats, especially, you know, when you've got lots of time and different things happen, you know, and like there's, what do they call it, Vipassana romances that spring up, people, you know, kind of get looking about that. I have sort of mindfulness grudges about people that are doing nothing but just being there, you know, that are quite oblivious to my discontent and, you know, and irritation, to anger, to rage, you know, and on reflection, you know, I've appreciated in retrospect that they were just the symbol, usually, of what was going on. And their gift to me was that I was able to focus for a time and work it through. It was a little backwards. And then over time, you know, the person that, like, you know, maybe 3 years ago, was just like, well, not a big deal anymore, you know. And they've done nothing different other than being themselves, right? So, and that kind of leads with that working with anger, it is transformative. But you have to work with it and believe that working with it will be okay. And then working with anger is certainly different than working with patience. It's a slightly different, it's nuanced, right? You know, it's they approach it a little bit differently, you know, in some ways. But I think it's more cause and effect. I'm not really sure. But the formula is still the same. Just like we look at anger and it's recommended to start in small doses of situations that you'll sit with, it also says to start in small doses of being patient and to be into the present moment. So practicing with patience. Life is full of happy, neutral, and difficult situations. So every day we're offered usually one of each. And just some cautionary, this is a bit repetitive about, can't believe this is happening, why me? Other sort of ways, if you can't find a solution, what's the point of being upset? And then expanding the meaning of suffering from yourself to others, when suffering is ours instead of mine. This might be brazenly cheeky, but I'm like kind of thinking that I would be cautious personally about that too, because of the tendency to put it out too far, too quickly, would be my caution. It's a way, but I think it's also a way to get into trouble a little bit, because if it's too expansive, it may minimize what's going on closer to home. And then some of the other things that you hear, and we'll hear about it constantly about in the teachings, you know, noticing the first part when you're angry, but how about when you notice when you're in the middle of it and you've completely missed the first part, the first three chapters of it, and you're in the middle of it, you know, and what happens and what do you do when you're there? And what kind of damage control has to happen afterward. And it did remind me too of something that I couldn't source it, but I remember hearing from a talk about the fact that our poor little chemicals are acting up, and you might actually get mentally to a resolve, but your body is racing on and on and on and on, and it can't settle, you know, and that's sort of where things are, you know, challenging. So, however, back to meditation. Why is this good for us? And these are the two succinct and the good ones, is that sitting on your cushion allows us to work situations over in our minds before they occur. So you can dress rehearse, you can kind of look at things, you can feel things in there. Or you can go back and take a look on what happened. And this is a quote, and get a feel for alternatives. Sounds a bit like, you know, but I think that's actually why that is there. And that certainly, I could only speak for myself, that my cushion was the safe place, right? That I could tolerate more and more aspects of it. And I was able to lean into it because I was just on my cushion and it was okay. And I am a sentient being, so if it was not too uncomfortable, I could say, okay, that's enough for today. But that's why that's kind of there, you know, so. And to learn to literally sit with it until it's run its course, which everything does, right? It just runs its course. I totally forgot to put a clock here, so I have no idea where my time is. Okay. I meant to. Oh, 11:30?
Yeah.
Oh, we're still good.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
Okay, so. And then, you know, I don't, you know, you write these things and it's like, oh, I never do good summaries. You know, I just sort of let them drop. But, oh, well, you know, so maybe the next one, I don't know. But, you know, on that, so. So, like I've been doing all along, and I actually think this one might actually take a little longer. We're going to move into the sense exercise, for lack of a better term, or guided meditation. And it'll sound quite familiar if you've been participating, and then it won't. And then we'll close and we'll go into service. So this is your chance to get extra cushions if you want. This is your chance to get blankets if you feel like in the Zendo in Zoom land. You can do the same. You can get comfy. Do we want to turn the lights down a little bit? Yeah. So if you want to lie down, whatever you want, but the whole idea is to get pretty comfortable and relaxed. So, do you need an extra? Oh, yeah, everybody's. We'll give everybody a couple of minutes. And like I've said before, this is certainly not Zen meditation technique. We know that for sure. Just in case anybody's news out there and is wondering. You know, but it's the intention is to offer a different view or perspective to your practice. And that we're looking for the touchstones of feelings wherever we can. And that all of this is optional. If you think this is not for you, you can tune me out. You can turn your camera off. You can go get a cup of tea. Whatever is comfortable for you. And we're not trying to take any deep dives into this, especially, like I said, with the topic of today. However, it's possible because I'm asking you to consciously relax and settle. It could open you up to experience some sensations. And if those are uncomfortable, recognize that you're in charge and just stay with whatever works for your practice for today. So we're going to take a few minutes of settling. I'll offer some suggestions based on this paramita. I'm going to rest and reflect in what the body informs you. So you take any position. Your eyes can be open or closed. It can be on your back, on your side, whatever is comfortable. As you settle into your position and as your body begins to ease and settle, you may choose, if you want, to take a cleansing type breath and a deep breath in and a deep breath out. And another deep breath in and a deep breath out to release. And if you choose, you can find a breath pattern that is calming and comfortable for you. We'll just take a few moments and a few cycles of breath in your own way. And then as you begin to settle more, maybe be aware of the points of your body that are in contact with your cushion or your seat, the soles of your feet on the floor, your back against a chair, knees touching each other. Hands in your lap, hands on the floor. And as you settle and soften into the gentleness of the earth's embrace, and you notice the pressures of any point of contact, can you ease a little bit more? The invitation is maybe to perhaps use your breath to invite into your body, into your being, a sense of spaciousness, a sense of fearlessness, a sense of generosity, a sense of kindness and compassion. So now, perhaps reflect on a time where practicing patience comes easily for you. Like how one might tend to a slightly fussy child, or a pet who keeps staring or sighing or whining at you for their dinner literally hours before it's time, or a project you are working on that isn't quite fitting, but the challenge of figuring out the solution outweighs any sense of frustration. Listening to a close friend who may have a tendency to ramble. Or just waiting, and looking for those first garden tomatoes to ripen. How does that sensation, that patience, present in your body? Maybe your breath is easy, your body is relaxed, a general sense of acceptance, maybe unruffled. Now, if you wish, reflect on a time where patience is less available. Nothing big. Waiting for your coffee order, and the person in front can't decide what they want, or has decided to order for the entire office. Or the umpteenth cry from the back seat, "Are we there yet?" Or the partner who doesn't quite understand the concept of turning off lights when leaving the room. Some sort of moment that might happen regularly to you. Something fairly benign. While you consider this moment, where in your body does a sense of irritation rise? Maybe in your jaws as they clench to not say anything again? Your shoulders tensing or rising a bit, just a bit? Fists tightening? Maybe the breath is just a little shallower. Or maybe there's a temperature, a warmth, somewhere in your body or your belly. And can you give yourself permission simply to observe and experience this sensation? Can you simply bear witness to your own irritation without judgment, without adding on to the narrative? They should train their staff better here. Can you, for a few moments, just rest into the sensation and experience it just for what it is? A sensation, no more, no less. And if you found or were able to isolate a particular sensation, could you perhaps invite some sort of movement into it? Like placing the tip of your tongue, the roof of your mouth, or between your teeth to release your jaw. Or take a slightly deeper breath, consciously lifting and tightening your shoulders a little bit more and then letting it all go. or just opening and closing your hands. Or something else that you can offer to shift the sensation into a subtler ease. And as you sit with it and allow, does anything happen to it? It might get less, it might not. Can you be curious about it? Or not? Or maybe you just simply sit with the sensation and allow it to travel its course, like watching a wind-up toy. Tap, 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 tap. So a poem by Pat Schneider. It's a kind of love, is it not? How the cup holds the tea, how the chair stands sturdy and foursquare, how the floor receives the bottoms of our shoes or toes, how the soles of feet know where they're supposed to be. I've been thinking about the patience of ordinary things, how clothes wait respectfully in closets, and soap dries quietly in the dish, and the towel drinks the wet from the skin of the back, and the lovely repetition of stairs, and what is more generous than a window. It's a kind of love, is it not? How the cup holds the tea, how the chair stands sturdy and foursquare, how the floor receives the bottoms of our shoes or toes, how soles of feet know where they're supposed to be. I've been thinking about the patience of ordinary things, how clothes wait respectfully in closets, and the soap dries quietly in the dish, and the towel drinks the wet from the skin of the back, and the lovely repetition of stairs, and what is more generous than a window? I didn't bring my bell, so I'll go ding. Now the invitation will be bring yourself back to a more alert awareness. Just take your time. You may wish to begin to gently move hands and feet. Take some full breaths. And gradually, in your time, return to your seat and back into our shared space. Oh, this is fun. I like this. I can't see that here. You guys are too small out there. And so, some reflections. Some are standard. Consider what sensations stood out for you or not. Were there any that surprised you or made you curious? Or any parts of your body that you noticed that didn't seem to feel anything, were neutral or unexplored? And how might you carry the awareness of these sensations into your cushion and into your day-to-day practice? And when you maybe find yourself confronting a habit pattern of irritation or impatience, can you instill a sense of awareness, holding with it till it runs its own course? Maybe with the same patience of ordinary things. Or a color, a sensation, a texture. And who could you invite to help you, your animal or entity? And for this week, you might need two, for patience and for irritation. It might be the same one, but you might need double up. It might take two kittens, for example. And then Norman's got, he's got some good ones, so I'm gonna like. So he's, pay close attention to all moments of frustration that rise during the day. These are precious for your practice of patience. All jars, packages, doors or windows that won't open easily. Traffic and checkout lines. Slow hardware, software malfunctions. All people who are too slow or picky. all people who seem not to listen when you speak. Notice the frustration. Label it as frustration. Note thoughts and actions associated with frustration. The goal is not to make the frustration go away, though it likely will, but to study it and appreciate it. And that's my personal bias, because I know that's what's helped me. And maybe someday I'll be better with the slogans and the things to say to myself. I know some of you have gathas that are quite lovely. Not so much as I can. But I do know that it does shift, and I think it's actually quite important to work on that and sense it and notice it and not apologize or excuse or whatever. It's just like the generosity. It's so much easier to do it for somebody else, not for yourself. It's so much easier to see the rationale with somebody else's, but ours, we want to push it away, want to come up with whatever. And I think with that, that's when we lose something on that. So that's what would be my invitation, is to just maybe view it a little bit differently than you might have done in the past. And we'll know, because we'll see it. We'll see you in your beautiful repose. So don't worry about that part, But until then, it's still a good image to work with. A couple of thousand eons, we might all meet up. Okay, and I think we're good. I'm gonna go out here. I'm gonna shut this off.